We'll bring you the August 30th, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Gary, N9VU, with this rain report. For those of you who've played on 10 meters in the past several decades, you'll recall there were times you could literally work the world on a couple of watts. While 10 just hasn't performed all that well this cycle, you can still work the world on the lower HF bands operating QRP 5 watts or fewer. One ham who has is Rich Arlen, K7SZ, a world-renowned QRP'er who spoke at the QRP-ARCI Amateur Radio Club International Forum at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. He was introduced by forum moderator Ken Evans, W4DU.
The man we're going to hear from this morning is Rich Arlen, current author of Low Power Communications, The Art and Science of QRP. He was first licensed in 1965. He spent 20 years in the U.S. Air Force, 16 of those overseas. So he's done some operating from the other side of the pond, including West Germany, the Azores, England, and Japan. After retiring from the Air Force, he taught vocational electronics in the Pennsylvania prison system. So after he got out of the Air Force, he went to prison, is basically what he's saying. He's written for QST, CQ Magazine, CQ VHF, Monitoring Times, Popular Communications, and Pacific Stars and Stripes. And he was the editor of the former QRP column for QST.
My name's Rich Arlen, and this is not QRP 101, it's QRP 102 or 103. This program is designed to concentrate more on antennas and what we need to do to get that DXCC on the wall and things like that. We'll just go through a few of the basics here. The QRP signal was originally designed as a CW shorthand for please reduce power or shall I reduce power. And the current definition is 5 watt amateur radio or below. We really do it all at 5 watts and below. I know guys who have gotten DXCC and was at 1 watt. So it is possible to be entirely effective as a DXer and a contester using QRP power levels. We had an interesting conversation here. Ken did anyway. I kind of followed in behind it, asking a few questions of some people up at the league. They wanted to know, before they put out the current QRP DXCC award, you don't have to have cards for it. You just have to have it verified by two other people that you had the necessary contacts. Ken asked the league, well, why can't we do a regular QRP endorsement? And he said, well, we can't confirm that you used 5 watts or less. My retort on that is, all those sugar daddies that keep shoving big money at you guys and are on the honor roll, how do you verify the fact that they are running 1,500 watts or less? Having run 11 kilowatts on 20 meters at one time, that's a confession, it's no challenge. I'll tell you what, we're in the middle of the Azores using a scope level on U.S. Air Force Airways circuitry. We worked right across the U.S., and when we got into the South Pacific, we had to go up to 11 kW, but they heard us at 20 over. So what's the challenge? That's about the same time I got interested in QRP, by the way. This is the history of QRP in a nutshell. In 1960, K6JSS, Harry Bloomquist, started the QRP ARCI. At that time, high power was defined as over 500 watts, medium power was 100 to 500 watts, and low power was less than 100 watts. And in 1979 into 1980, the club did a tremendous turnover and decided to come back in line with what the other QRP clubs throughout the United Kingdom and Europe were doing, and that's 5 watts output, since we finally conceded it was okay to measure the output power and it was done accurately. There is a group of guys that do the milliwatt QRP, and that's QRP sub-P, and they are just short of crazy, but they are really, really good operators. The objective on QRP, and these are all laudable ideals. Efficiency of antennas is the one thing that we're going to concentrate on here in a few minutes. That and operating skills. If you don't have adequate operating skills, you're shooting yourself in the foot, and especially if you're trying to use 5 watts or less. You can get away with it with 100 watts because eventually you'll get through the pileup or work the station you want to work. But in QRP, you're giving up 13 dB of power between your station and a 100-watt station. You need to have the skill set to go ahead and work these stations and be a good, courteous operator. The use of ICs and SMDs, one of the trends in QRP now is that everything's going to service mount technology. And it's really, really difficult for me to solder that stuff because of the medication my doc has got me on. One of the things you got to realize is QRP is not for everyone. And you'll find people at the local club say, oh, QRP, I tried that, that's, I didn't have any luck. Well, it's probably because they really didn't give it a good try. You got to check your ego at the door, because most of the guys who run 1500 watts and have big beam antennas also have 1500 watt linears or 2000 watt linears. They got big egos. They like to be heard on the air. Loud is good is one of the t-shirts I remember seeing at a couple of DX conventions. These guys are not going to go with QRP, except for one or two notable exceptions. One of them is W9KNI, Bob Locker, head of Idiom Press. He's a really cool guy, and he went ahead one time and decided, I'm going to run my K2 at about 10 watts output, and he did 100 countries in about 3.5-4 months. But he's got the antennas to do it, too. I think he was in the Midwest. He's now out in Portland, Oregon. We don't have too much TVI problems nowadays as we did in the past because of the cable systems and satellite TV. But occasionally, you will find people getting into the phone system in the house or the toaster. QRP basically eliminates TVI and RFI. When you do that, you can operate from restricted areas like housing complexes that don't allow you to put outside antennas. There's a lot of simplicity in the homebrew gear. I saw a two-channel scope in a tuna tin. W1REX has a scope, two-channel scope built in a tuna tin. And it's amazing. I thought that was the coolest thing I'd seen in a long time. Of course, I couldn't watch it very long because I can't see, but the idea was great. Motivation to go into QRP is it's an inexpensive way to enjoy ham radio. You can buy used QRP gear or you can make your own. It's a great way to get your CW speed up. And as long as we're talking about CW, let's be perfectly clear here, we're also talking about data. A lot of people don't want to get into CW because it requires them to learn CW language and become proficient. But PSK and HEL and a bunch of other digital modes work very, very well at low power levels. Matter of fact, PSK, you normally don't run more than 10 or 15 watts maximum. And most of the guys that I know run around 1 and 2, maybe 3 watts output. And they have all sorts of fun with that. Digital modes are the way of the future. Get used to it, get handy with it, and learn something. ARRL has a lot of good books out, besides mine, of course.
You're listening to a 2013 Dayton Hamvention Forum talk by world-renowned QRP'er Rich Arlen, K7SZ, veteran author, and DXer. We'll continue this mini-tutorial in just a moment. The Rain Report reminds you listeners in the greater Northeast Illinois area that there will be a handful of forums coming up on Saturday, September the 7th at Radio Expo, being held at the Boone County Fairgrounds in Belvedere, Illinois. We'll give you a brief forum rundown at the end of this week's program.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
The one area that a QRPer can make a real difference in a signal is with the antennas. The more time you spend with the antenna installation or installations, the better off you're going to be. Because if you can select between two or three antennas because of propagation conditions, because of the antenna pattern doesn't favor the direction that you want to get into. I ran into this WPX contest. I'm down to a single 40-meter extended double zap at 55 feet. And the lobes on that thing on 20 meters and on 40 meters do not correspond to anything regarding Europe. And I can hear some Europeans, but they could not hear me at all at 100 watts. The dipole or doublet antenna is probably the best overall antenna that you can put up to be effective. With so little effort, it's often downplayed. And that's one of the things that I really have to stress is the dipole being a simple antenna, being an inexpensive antenna, you can throw one or two of them up and cover the directions you want to cover and have a lot of fun with 5 watts. If you want it low to the ground, you're going to get coverage out to about 200 miles called NVIS, Near Vertical Incident Skywave. That's okay, too. If you can't get it up in the air, you can still work out 200 to 300 miles with QRP. All of the modes you can get DXCC with. It's not tough at all. It requires some persistence, but primarily you use contests, QSO parties, holidays, different holidays in different countries to fill in the blanks. Good logging program. Who is it? Microlog, W0XA or something like that, has a really good little $10 logging program that's great. I use his on one machine and I use N3 FJPs on the other machine. And between the two of them, I got my logging covered, I got contests covered, and keep track of my totals and everything else. I've worked DXCC about 3 times. I've never gotten the paperwork together to go ahead and get the certificate. So this time I'm going to do it for real. Keep it simple. The simpler, the better. And again, wire antennas are simple. They're very flexible in configuration. My extended double zep at the house in Pennsylvania actually was bent back on itself to keep it within my property lines. And they're also very low profile. My daughter lives in a housing estate in Tampa, and they do not allow any kind of external antennas. I took an 80, 40, 30, and 20-meter selectable dipole, put it up 15, 16 feet in a palm tree, had it out for a week and a half, and worked K5D expedition down in Desecho with 5 watts and an FT817. Nobody said a word. They weren't looking for it. It's hard to see, so it worked out well. Quarter wavelength on a leg or half wavelength overall. It works very, very well. You don't need an antenna tuner. You can if you want to. Try to get those to work on another band. You may have some limited success. The radiation pattern goes a little squirrely at times. So it's best to sit there. If you're going to have a single band dipole, pick the band or bands you want to do. Put up an antenna for each of those bands and use an antenna switch. Again, you're not talking about anything more than a cost of wire, a couple connectors, and coax. What they call a figure eight pattern broadside to the antenna at a quarter wavelength, which for 80 meters is about 67 feet up in the air. That's a long ways up. 40 meters is about 33 feet. That's attainable. 80 meters, that pattern is going to be a little bit skewed because unless you have some really tall trees or a tower that you can hang it off on, you're going to be having a little bit different radiation pattern, but not all that much. Single band dipoles, 1 feed line, use fanned elements. They provide extremely good performance versus cost. And again, we're all conscious of cost because cost is money out of your pocket. It can better be used for something else. There's several variations of these out there. There's one called the Cobra. I've used one for about 6 months. It was a good antenna. It was multiband. Basically, the antenna finds the right set of wires to go on. It's magic, okay? One antenna, you can do it all. They're easy to erect, and they definitely will work their share of DX. This is the configuration that most of us look at when we see a dipole or think about it in our head. We don't look at it as a flat top. We look at it as inverted V. Why? Two reasons. Number one, it's omnidirectional. And number two, it's easier to put up. Okay, if you don't have any way to suspend the ends at the same height as the center, it's an easy way to get around that. Again, it goes from that broadside pattern to almost an omnidirectional circular pattern. But again, it's a good little antenna, and they work very, very well. Probably more things have been said pro and con on a G5RV antenna than anything else in the world. I had the very good favor to meet G5RV in England when I was stationed over there. And Lou Varney, I found he was a very nice man. He just sat down with me and we talked antennas for about 20 minutes. And he said, I don't know why everybody is so taken with this silly little antenna that I put together. It's only a 20-meter antenna, but these guys are trying to make it work on all bands. And he says, you've got to have a tuner to do that. And he says, it's not efficient. He's right. It's basically 51 feet on a leg, 102 feet end to end. You can raise it up as the dipole, which is the most effective, the flat top version, which is most effective. It can be used on most of the HF bands with a tuner. It has a cult following. As it goes higher in frequency, above 20 meters, or lower in frequency especially, it develops some really, really squirrely radiation patterns. There's an open wire feed line or ladder line or twin lead down about 28 feet, and it's connected directly to coax. You can put a Balun in there if you want to, a one-to-one. It'll isolate the coax from the open wire feed line or the twin lead, and that's a good thing. You want to keep that radiation in the coax shield to a bare minimum. ZS6BKW came up with a different version of the thing. It's basically a G5RV, but it's got his call sign on it. It's a little bit smaller, but the ladder line or the feed line is a little bit longer, and he can go 5 bands with this thing. The legs are shorter, and he's lengthened the balanced feed line about 10 feet, not quite. Goes directly into the coax. Again, you can put a one-to-one balun down there and get away from any radiation. On the end connected to the radio, he uses W2DU chokes. If you have access to a bunch of the old monitors off computers, that cord that comes out and connects to your computer has 2 or 3 ferrite rings inside a plastic capsule. Cut the cord off, throwaways, open that up, and do it 2 or 3 times, and you've got a whole stack of toroidal inductors for free that you can slip on your coax feed line. It works on RG59 or 58. That's a cheap way to do that rather than pay the exorbitant prices for those little hunks of ferrite. The easiest way to try QRP without spending any money is take your normal transceiver, back down the gain, and use it at the 5-watt level. And there are methods to do it on sideband and CW and data. And there's no reason why you can't. If you want to give it a try and give it an honest try and don't want to invest the money in a used Argonaut or something like that, that would be the best way to do it right there. Sometimes the rig requires an injection of a DC voltage, a bias voltage, on the ALC circuitry. And it's got a little ALC output on the back of the radio. Normally used for when you're driving a linear amp. But if you put that bias voltage on there, like a 9-volt battery and a potentiometer, you can adjust the power level well down into the 1-watt level on single sideband. Most of them tend not to go below 10 watts unless you contact the factory and they have a specific thing that you have to adjust in there and they say it won't void the warranty.
This has been the first of two excerpts from the 2013 Dayton Hamvention QRP Amateur Radio Club International ARCI Forum featuring Rich Arlen, K7SZ, a world-renowned QRPer and DXer. We'll conclude his mini-tutorial about QRPing next time with a rundown on what's available today for lower-powered HF communication gear. But before we go, here's what forums those attending the September 7th Radio Expo in Belvidere, Illinois, will find. A Northern Illinois DX Association talk on last June's H44AJ de-expedition to the Solomon Islands. Presentations by Radio Expo vendors Western Mountain Radio and Radio Waves, as well as Scott Childers, W9CHI, on the history of WLS radio, former RAIN commentator Mark Thompson, WB9QZB, on D-Star, Vince Whalty on Northern Illinois Skywarn, and lastly, RAIN's head honcho KC9RP on Getting Your Net's Worth. That's September the 7th, a Saturday, at the Boone County Fairgrounds, in Belvidere, Illinois. For more details, go to chicagofmclub.org. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2013 RAIN. All rights reserved. I'm Gary, N9VU, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.